Today's sales leaders face a difficult task, selling the right products at the right time through the right channels. A new three-day program from Harvard Business School Executive Education addresses this problem directly. Join us on the Boston campus in August for Managing Sales Teams and Distribution Channels, where you will discover strategies that can lead to the best sales performance. Learn more by clicking the banner or visiting hbs.me/sales. That's hbs.me/sales.
Thank you for tuning into the AJ Nashville podcast. Here's your host, ajnashville.com.
Hey guys, Alex here, ajnashville.com. Wanted to do my new podcast. This is episode 2 of the story of my life. I got to thinking the other night about the first episode that I released. During that episode, I know I covered certain areas of my life, certain things that had happened, but I feel like I skipped over quite a bit. You know, it's one of those things when you start to revisit the past, you tend to skim over the top and just move forward to the next piece. I realized that during that first piece that I only kind of hit on a couple points that were instrumental in my growth, but not some of the other major points as well. So even though I said in the last one that I was going to skip to the move to Moreno Valley, California, I actually want to back up a little bit and cover some of the past a little bit more in depth. So as I said in the first one, you know, obviously there was a lot of physical abuse, a lot of mental abuse, attempted suicides, you know, a couple times. So I want to go back into some earlier events that took place. Like there was a time where my mom had kidney failure, and so she was admitted to the hospital for several days while I was left at home with my stepdad. Obviously, he was the one left to care for us. It wasn't an option of my mom in order to be at home or not to be at home. It was something that she was forced to stay in due to her health. I do want to make it clear that, you know, people when they're younger, they make some poor decisions. I think people have a way of manipulating others into believing that their situation is better than it actually is. So I don't necessarily blame my mom for my past. I wish there was things she could have done that would have been different. However, it's not something that I say, hey, this is all your fault. You know, adults have decisions they make, and they were decisions made on both my sister's dad's behalf and my mom's behalf that I may not disagree with, or I may not agree with, but I don't necessarily hold it against them. So, like I said, my mom was admitted to the hospital for some kidney issues that she had had. And during that time, it was pretty much me, my sister, and my stepdad or sister's dad at the house. You know, there wasn't much going on. There wasn't any abuse that I can think of. But I remember looking on top of the mantle and noticing a small white bag or a small bag with a white substance in it. I remember running up to my room. And I had seen this happen before, so I was kind of aware of what it was, but I wanted to try it. I can't remember how old I was at the time, maybe 8, 9 years old, and I dipped my finger in the bag, tried it. It numbed my mouth. It was kind of weird. Obviously, it was cocaine in the bag. It wasn't anything else, but, you know, it gave me a weird tingling sensation. I was wired. You know, when I was a youth, when I was 7 years old, I was diagnosed with ADD. Or at that time, I believe it was called ADHD. And I was put on one of the highest dosage of Ritalin that was available. And Ritalin was still a drug that was relatively new. My mom eventually had me removed from the drug because of the fact that I literally sat there and acted like a zombie. I mean, I just zoned into the TV. I didn't do anything. I just became a zombie throughout the day. And it wasn't something that she liked. My creativity was lost. Everything else was lost. And I was just zoned out all the time. So I remember taking that and having kind of the same response as I did when I was on Ritalin at the time. It kind of wound me up, kept me going. I believe I tried it a couple more times. Well, at some point, my sister's dad was getting upset. I could tell he was irritated. He asked me if I had seen a bag up on top of the mantle. I told him no. Obviously, I didn't want to get in trouble. I didn't want to get caught with it. I knew what he was looking for, but, you know, I didn't want to get in any more trouble than I was already going to be in anyways. So as he's searching for it, can't find it, obviously his anger turns towards me, which, you know, it was something that I had the guilt that I knew that I had taken it, knew that I had tried it, but still didn't feel like I should have been the person that he took his anger out on. It obviously led to a pretty good ass whooping. He was mad. Obviously, his drugs were gone. He had to go out and get more. Pretty good ass whooping had taken place from that. And then obviously he told my mom that it was missing and that he suspected that I took it once she was released from the hospital. So, you know, that I guess I bring that back up because that was one of the first times that I had experienced something like that. It was, you know, I was young, had never tried anything obviously like that. It was left to where I could reach it, and so I tried it. You know, I got some of the repercussions from my stepdad or my sister's dad from it. And obviously it was a learning experience. It wasn't something I wanted to do, but I saw the adults do it all the time. And so I figured that I would try to see what the big fuss was about, so to speak. So fast forward a little bit, my mom had gotten released from the hospital. You know, she was back at home and everything. And so things were starting to go kind of the way they were. I remember one day I was sitting at the chair at the dinner table. My mom was in the kitchen cooking. Now, my sister's dad was full-on Hispanic, and one of the meals that he enjoyed was a meal called menudo. It's something that not all people can take to. It's actually pretty good. If I do say so myself, I've tried it plenty of times. I enjoy it, but I do remember him being at the table one day. He was sitting there eating it, and it wasn't hot enough, and he got irritated and flipped the table over. When he flipped it over, it was a long coffee table with two sheets of glass on top of it that you could see through. When he flipped it over, both those sheets of glass shattered. The table was on its top, and he proceeded to the kitchen to strike my mom, punch her in the face, choke her, basically do whatever he wanted to do because he was pissed off because his soup wasn't to his temperature, wasn't to the degree he wanted it to be. In turn, I obviously was scared. I was young. I was sitting at the table. I didn't know what to do. I was pushed out of my chair, and then I was told to stand in the corner or kneel in the corner on a tray that had rice on it. The purpose of that is you put your knees in it, and after a while, the rice kind of embeds itself in your knees. And from what I understand, it's an old punishment that they used to use on Catholic kids to make them not do some of the things they did. So I remember sitting there on my knees for quite a while, my mom in the kitchen crying, my sister's dad pissed off, took off downstairs. We had a attached garage to this condo / townhome that we lived in. So he went downstairs to do his thing. And then after a while, everything kind of cleared up and I helped my mom clean up the glass. And it was like, none of this ever happened. You know, like I said, it didn't matter what it was. My sister's dad always made his way back in the picture, always found a way to get forgiveness and move forward. You know, I talked earlier in the last episode about the time I was coming out of the woods and I had the bag of crickets and I told him not to open the bag. What I had left out is that when he opened it and they started flying out, he turned around and punched me in the face. You know, at that time, for a grown man, and he was a big guy. He wasn't a little, you know, scrawny dude. He was a big guy. For something like that to happen was just, it was devastating. I mean, I got to a point where the beatings and everything else were so severe that I started tuning my mind to something else. Like, I would focus on something else in order to tune out the pain, so to speak. So instead of just sitting there and allowing it to hurt me, I would tune it out and ignore the pain. I know it sounds like it's something that's far-fetched or hard to believe, but I believe the human mind plays a part where when pain gets so strong, you have a way of tuning it out and kind of thinking about something else, and then the pain doesn't exist. So I learned how to do that at a very young age as well, because of the fact that it seemed like the more I screamed, the more I cried, the more it antagonized him to continue to hit me more. So tune that part out. Learned how to do that very well. Started doing that in the future when I would get spankings and whippings or whatever you want to call them. you know, it was one of those things that I think that was part of me that developed to protect myself, was just ignoring the fact that the pain was there, ignoring the fact that the words hurt, you know, because I believed I was stupid. But one of my lashes of anger, I went to a school. It was called Vista Square, and Vista Square is located in San Diego, in Chula Vista to be more specific. And right up the street from Vista Square is a high school. And me and a buddy of mine used to walk to school every day. And every day, the same freshman would stand there and talk shit to us as we were walking past. It was just what he did. You know, he wasn't much bigger than us. We were young at the time, third, fourth grade. He wasn't a big guy by any means. But every time, he would have something to say and talk shit to us. And I remember my buddy saying, "You should go up and you should hit him sometime." And it was one of those things, like, I had enough anger built in me. I didn't know any better. So one day we were walking up to school, and there stood the ninth grader that liked to talk shit. And as I approached him, I took probably three or four big steps, jumped up, and hit him with the right cross in the jaw. And my buddy and I took off running the rest of the way to school. It was about two blocks or so the rest of the way to school. But, you know, that release of anger, I think, is part of what I had learned as a way to express myself, and it was a way to release things anyway. So it kind of backfired, because it felt good to do that, which led to some of my more aggressive actions as I got older. It actually led to me being suspended from Vista Square about 18 times in the rest of the school year after that, because I had learned that release, that physical release, was something that I enjoyed. It was something that I liked. And so it became a person that enjoyed fighting, enjoyed getting into it with others. And like I said, I was third, fourth, fifth grade tops, you know, very tops fifth grade. So I had learned to release my anger in ways that were reflective upon the way that my stepdad treated the family, you know. Not something I'm proud of by any means, but as an older adult, I see the correlation of some actions and how I use those actions to create my reactions. You know, and as a kid, one of the things I remember, my mom worked all the time, my dad worked all the time, or not dad, but sister's dad worked all the time, but we didn't really have money to get us by. I remember being embarrassed because my mom would get food stamps. I remember, you know, going to the grocery store, things like that, and her having to cash in food stamps to get food. I remember us going to the Lord's cupboard and getting, and I know some of you guys that are listening to this remember this, the peanut butter jars that simply say peanut butter on them. They're white, and they have black letters, and they have a picture of a peanut on them. You open it up, and if you don't stir in that 3/4 inch of oil at the top of it, it's going to be nothing but chalky, nasty. I don't even know that they were real peanuts. I think they were like regurgitated peanuts from rich people that flew on airlines or something. But anyways, that and the government cheese. You know, the cheese that no matter what you did, you could throw it like into a deadly fire, and the cheese still wouldn't melt. It would just be a little yellow square. And if you wanted to, you could put like 50 of them down and create your own yellow brick road that would be greasy and little yellow squares. So that was the cheese that we had. But I remember, you know, having embarrassment in that, but it was the only way that my mom could make ends meet to make sure that my sister and I had enough food to eat. You know, we never had anything fancy. I remember my mom had the ugliest green station wagon with wood paneling. I mean, this thing was beyond hideous. This thing looked like a shit took a shit, and that piece of shit was molded into a car, and then they put wood panels on the side. I remember my mom would pick me up from school sometimes, and she would open the back, and I would run and dive into the back hoping that nobody would see me. I remember there was a place called Ferris's or something like that, right diagonal from the school I went to, and I could sneak over there through a cutout in the gate during the lunchtime and get a little 10-cent thing of soda water. I don't know why I wanted soda water back then. Maybe it was like my hint that, hey, you know what? You might want some vodka to go with this too. But I don't know why I went for the soda water, but I did, and that was my little thing. I would sneak over there, and those were kind of things that I would do because my mom would give me some change that was left over or something like that. And those were things I would do in order to bring myself some happiness, I guess you could say. You know, there was a lot of things that I did that my mom covered up so my sister's dad wouldn't react to me, you know, because she saw what was going on. She wanted to be sure that she did what she could to protect me, but there was only so many limitations. And the one thing I will tell you, some of you that are listening to this may think, well, why didn't she just up and leave? You know, it's not necessarily that easy. When you're being manipulated by somebody, when you have children, when you don't know where you're going to go, it's not a matter of just up and going. And my sister's dad made it a point to make sure it wasn't a matter of just up and going. You know, he knew everywhere she was at, whenever she was somewhere. You know, he knew what was going on. She basically fed him any information that he wanted to know. You know, a couple things that I learned while I was growing up because of my sister's dad position in, you know, gangs and drug deals and everything else. I specifically remember as I was growing up, you just didn't look at other people. You minded your own business. You stared down. You know, you didn't pay attention to other people. You didn't sit with your back towards the door. You know, if you saw something go down, you just left it alone. You didn't acknowledge it. You went the other direction. You know, it was a strategy to survive, so to speak, because there was so much gang violence and everything like that in California. You know, you let things ride and you go on about your life. I would say that's probably one of the better things that he taught me, if you can consider that something good. You know, I learned to keep to myself and do my own thing and worry about me and not everybody else, because what everybody else is doing is not a problem of mine. Now, as an adult, that's a little different. You know, if I see somebody getting beat up by somebody, I'm going to intervene. It's just who I am. You know, and that's something different than what I was taught when I was younger. But as a younger kid, when there's gang violence and stuff like that around, it was probably a survival tactic that helped make it through those younger years. It wasn't like we lived, you know, in the rich part of town or anything like that. We didn't really live in the hood, but there was a lot of gang activity in our area. And so we had to be mindful of things like that. You know, doing simple things like going to the rec center. I remember we used to go to the rec center. If you had a personal belonging, you could get something like a basketball to play basketball with, or, you know, the pool cues or something like that. You would turn in whatever you had for whatever piece that you wanted to use at the time. It was a great community center, great program. It's something that I wish still existed for a lot of other kids. But even at that age and at that time, you know, if you went in to play basketball and the older kids didn't want you to play, they would simply take your ball, you know. And it was a gang thing, so to speak, to where you didn't go back and say, hey, they got my ball. You just forgot about whatever it was that you turned in to get the ball, left the ball there, and went and did your own thing. You know, that was the nature of the beast, unless you wanted to get your ass kicked. So, you know, those were some of the things that I'd missed in the first podcast that I wanted to go back and touch base on. They were some things that created influence and created the way I operate nowadays. You know, I'm still the guy that doesn't sit with his back to the door. Why? Because there's that fear that somebody will walk in and do something and I'll be the last to know. You know, the aggression part, that was something I dealt with for years as an adult. I was very quick to get in a fight with somebody or an altercation or whatever it may be, and a lot of that stemmed from the way I was treated as a youth. The other thing is words. Words used to be extremely hurtful for me up until probably my late 20s. You know, if you called me a bitch, which is the normal term for, you know, adults kind of joke around, oh man, you're a bitch, you know, something like that. It's something you see each other use quite a bit, but the words bitch and the words stupid from somebody coming from a different standpoint other than a friend's one will set me off quicker than can be, or I should say used to set me off quicker than can be, to the point where it would turn into an immediate aggressive standpoint. I had to actually attend anger management, which I didn't learn shit in anger management. Where I learned things from was starting to mature and starting to see people around me and starting to get older and do the different things that, you know, people that are more mature, more responsible do. When you start hanging out with people that have bigger liabilities, you start to realize really quick that being the smart mouth that just handles business isn't the person that you want to be. But, you know, these were things that from my past, I had learned. They were learned behaviors. Now, does that make them right? Absolutely not. Does that excuse that? No. You know, there for a while, I was wondering in my teens if I was going to wind up in prison or if I was going to wind up being successful, you know. And the things that fuel that is the things of my past that have kind of rolled throughout my life. You know, I remember, speaking of drug deals, my sister's dad's brother was a police officer. His other brother worked for IBM, and I remember coming out to the living room at one point, and there was probably about 25 pounds of marijuana sitting there, and guns on the table, and a couple Mexican guys that I'd never seen before in my life sitting there. I remember going to make drug deals. You know, he used to have a little 280 Datsun Z, you know, and back then those were kind of like the Japanese equivalent to a higher-end sports car. It's a really cool car. I wish I had one right now because they'd be worth quite a bit of money. But I remember we'd go places and I'd sit in the car for hours on end to the point where I'd fall asleep. He'd say, don't move, don't get out, sit here, and I'll be back when I get back. You know, and those were to go make drug deals. I remember the back room of my sister's dad's house being an area where there was always weed kept. You know, now I don't know if she turned a blind eye to it or if she knew what was going on or if it was just that big of a secret. You know, but I just remember there was always, always weed back there. And I'm not bringing that up to try to glamorize that. I'm bringing that up so you understand the standpoint, kind of where their mind was at and what it was they were focused on and how it was that they made their money to do the things they wanted to do. You know, it was just something. It was basically their family's trade, so to speak. It seemed like it was very common for all the brothers to interact in that type of stuff. So, you know, the dad owned a marina down in Tijuana or somewhere like that, and they used to bring it up by boat. It was what they enjoyed doing, and once again, how they made, I guess, the family money. I don't remember his mom ever working, but I remember them having a nice house and a nice place to live, nice cars, things like that. So, you know, it's one of those things, like I said, I'm not glamorizing it. It's just the way life was. But anyways, this thing's running kind of long this time around. I wanted to go ahead and get this out, bring us back down to where we were talking about some details that were dismissed and discussed. I didn't have a clear conscience with knowing that I only disclosed certain things because I want this to be a situation where everything's kind of on the table. So anyways, thank you so much again for tuning in. Thank you so much for your time. I hope you guys have enjoyed this podcast. If you know somebody that would benefit by listening to this podcast, please like, tag, share. You know, if you've got someone that, and actually I was kind of flattered. There was a friend of mine that reached out to me and said that she really enjoyed listening to this podcast because it reminded her that she wasn't the only person that went through the things she went through. So it lets me know that I'm in the right direction, helping the right people and at least getting through to people. If I can do this podcast and get through to one person, then I've done my job. You know, I've done what I was meant to do. So if you know somebody that'll benefit from this, please, by all means, tag them, share this with them, have them private message me, whatever. But anyways, thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you guys have a nice evening.
Today's sales leaders face a difficult task, selling the right products at the right time through the right channels. A new 3-day program from Harvard Business School Executive Education addresses this problem directly. Join us on the Boston campus in August for Managing Sales Teams and Distribution Channels, where you will discover strategies that can lead to the best sales performance. Learn more by clicking the banner or visiting hbs.me/sales. That's hbs.me/sales.